topics that you wanted to make sure that we got covered?
Well, I guess I need to cover as many of the legal issues as possible. He's had most of his property in trust for about 20 years. I finally got power of attorneys done, both the financial and the medical. Whatever else we could prepare for any long-term care that might be necessary very quickly. We've had 2 years of trying to get him to therapists and to get some sort of adjudication of the situation. We haven't been able to even pull his driver's license, but he has managed to lose everything, especially in the past 2 months. He has lost every single item he's put in his hand.
Okay, and he lives alone currently, is that right?
He does. I've got a Ring doorbell installed.
Yeah, and then you can have the two-way microphone to be helpful too sometimes.
Yeah.
Inside the house if you can want to consider that.
We do through the cameras for that. We've tried using the Alexa and Google Nest devices, trying to get at least be able to say, you know, call Bram, and that doesn't work either.
Yeah, it's learning something new at this point is probably too difficult. Yeah, sometimes those things are helpful and sometimes not. And how far are you from him, approximately?
At the moment, we're in downtown Spokane. He lives in Coeur d'Alene.
Okay, gotcha, okay. And has he had any falls, like falling down inside or outside?
When he was obsessing with kicking up the leaves this fall, yes, he's had a few tumbles. Nothing that has broken anything or has deeply cut him, but he has had some contusions on his forehead, but nothing that indicated he was losing consciousness when he fell. He has got bad knees from college football and refused to get those replaced 15 or 20 years ago.
Okay, and so just kind of superficial cuts in that when he had the fall.
Yeah, yes, he's got a yard with lots of roots from Quakey and stuff. That he's got a very forested property.
I see. And is there any paid help at this time? Anybody coming in to assist him?
Not paid assistance yet. I'm having an ongoing conversation with a neighbor who has nursing experience, and we may be getting her for like 1 or 2 or 3 days a week, maybe. But I don't have it consistent yet. I'm not sure I can get her to commit to an everyday situation.
I can send you some, you know, other agents as well that can be helpful. Like
yes,
if
please.
You're in a pinch and that doesn't work out. So, okay. So I'll send you that. Does he wear any type of fall detection device? Like, you know, those necklaces you can put on or anything like that?
No, he doesn't yet.
That might be something to consider, and I can send you information about that too. Just kind of things that you can put in place, you know, to give you more peace of mind and to keep him safe. The thing is, and he has to remember to put it on and charge it and that type of thing. So if you do have somebody coming in, like say the neighbor, or, you know, you hire someone, they can help with that. You know, hey, you know, William, you have to have your necklace on, or you have to put it on the charger or do it for him, that sort of thing.
If it is something that can't keep a charge for very long, like it has to be charged every day, it's going to be virtually impossible. He has managed.
Right, he won't remember.
He will move things from location to location. Lost probably 3 remote controls for the TVs, his phone, his charger, and only about 1 in 3 of those items has ever been found by anybody.
Yeah, sometimes what folks with the memory loss do is they put things away for safekeeping, and then it's lost forever pretty much because they've hidden it somewhere. They thought, okay, I have to put this is an important item. I have to put it somewhere, and it gets lost, and nobody can find it. And, of course, they don't remember where it is. So I know that can be kind of a challenge.
The biggest one, which we are absolutely mystified about, is his CPAP machine. He's got like a $4,000 Apria machine, which has gone completely on, and no evidence or record of it anywhere.
That's odd. That's kind of a larger item to be misplaced.
Yep.
Okay. Does he use a walker or a cane to get around, or is he able to get around on his own?
No, he will not use one, and no, he has not had one. He had a walking platform cane when he went through surgery for prostate and heart stent and stuff about 3 years ago and used it for about exactly a day and a half.
Lots of folks, you know, will refuse using one. Sometimes it's because the memory of using it is just not there. They can't remember, you know, that I'm supposed to be using it, or they don't want to look like an elderly person using a cane or a walker. You know, both things are understandable, but of course it would be better if he used one. Has he had physical therapy recently, like a physical therapy evaluation?
No.
Okay. Sometimes, you know, if you feel like his mobility is really decreasing, I know you've just gotten all this neurology sorted out and it's kind of one more thing to figure out, but if you have the time and you feel like it's necessary, you can ask the primary care physician for a physical therapy evaluation. Their training with using a walker or a cane will stick because they have, you know, certain ways to help people adopt that new thing in their life. So if that's something you want to explore,
yes,
if the doctor thinks
just
so,
understand in our conversations today, anything you recommend to try, I will be glad to try to schedule. So don't even worry about me answering yes or no on those things. Just add them to the list.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put that down as a reminder then. Physical therapy evaluation. I'll cover a few more topics, then we'll get to the legal stuff. So dressing and bathing, personal care, does he do that on his own, or are you seeing that that's declining his hygiene?
When I can put him in the shower myself, he will actually finish scrubbing both sides of his body, but won't always remember soap.
Okay. That's something that, you know, a caregiver, a companion could help with as well.
Right.
Kind of those reminders. Folks actually forget the steps, like how do I turn on the faucet? What am I supposed to be doing in here?
Right.
You know, so having everything ready. So I'll send you a document on bathing. If you can get him in there twice a week, I know, I mean, you're not close by, but that's the goal. So if, like, the caretaker's there, the caregiver is there, and they can, you know, get him to bathe twice a week, that would be sufficient. And how is his appetite? Have you noticed any rapid weight loss or weight gain?
He's had progressive weight loss for about 3 or 4 years. He's down to about 130 to 140. He had been up about 240 at one time.
Okay.
It's holding stable, but we're in the middle of transferring all of his clothes out of the house. He doesn't worry about trying to put on old clothes and put him into more comfortable sweat kind of material now.
That's smart that you've taken them away because he doesn't have it as an option. And is the doctor, the primary care, concerned about the weight at all? Have they, you know, recommended a nutritionist or anything like that?
I'm sure he's been concerned about it because he mentioned it decreasing as time goes on, but it has stabilized for a while, so I don't think he just kind of put it on the back of his list. I would be happy to see a nutritionist to see if there's any other ways we can convince him to actually find certain foods while he's shopping with you. If he's thinking he's making the decisions, it will be nothing but chocolate milk, Dr. Pepper, and ice cream.
All his preferred foods. Yeah, sometimes, you know, the nutritionist will recommend something like an Ensure or a Boost, like a protein drink that, you know, tastes fairly good and has a lot of calories and has a lot of protein in it. So those are easy to get down. You know, you don't have to think much about them. Take them out of the fridge and open the can. All of these things that you're mentioning and that you ticked off on the questionnaire are things that he obviously needs help with at this point. So I think you're on the right track of looking towards the next step of how are we going to get him that help in the home and then eventually, you know, plan for the future. Okay, safety proofing the home. Are there any firearms in the home that are not secure?
No, he is a hunter and I've searched the house a number of times. I believe that the grandsons have removed those 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, so as far as you know, there's nothing. Okay, so they've been removed. Okay, that's good. Do you have safety concerns with him using the stove or any appliances in the home?
Yes, I've already removed all the knobs from the stove. He tried to heat up soup in a plastic container on a stove once, and he has been storing metal items in the microwave, so I'm looking at getting that one disconnected somehow from inside the stove.
Okay. I'll send you a checklist as well, so you can kind of do your own check through the house. All right. You did pick off here, you know, hospice and palliative care. Would you like me to send you a one-page sheet kind of outlining what the difference is, and did you want to talk about it, or?
Ma'am, as far as I understand it, this progressive dementia has been on him for at least 10 years, and it's accelerating massively this past year. I'm believing that we're going to be surprised at how long he hangs on, but I would not be surprised if something took him quickly. So, yes, anything would help.
Okay, and I'll just give you a quick, you know, overview, and then if you have questions, you can call me directly or email me in the future. So hospice is 6 months terminal, and that's determined by the doctor who says, okay, this person has roughly 6 months to live, and it's comfort care, you know, you stop doing kind of more invasive treatments, things like that, and it can be revoked at any time. Palliative is chronic long-term care management. You'll have access to a nurse, you'll have access to maybe a bath aid if they have the staffing for it, if you qualify. And a social worker, same with hospice, there's a social worker and a nurse as well. More long-term disease management. Those are the two differences. And that can also be stopped at any time, and both are covered by Medicare. Okay, I'll send you information about it. If you need to initiate any of this, if you're curious to, you know, learn further or actually have a consult, start with primary care and say, you know, do you think my dad is appropriate for a hospice consult? Is that something we can do? And then you can talk to the, you know, hospice nurse and get more information for education only. There's no pressure to, you know, I need to sign up for this because now they've, you know, done the referral. And then same with palliative care. You would ask the doctor, do you think my dad's appropriate for palliative care? And then they would put in an order for a palliative care consult.
I would say yes on both situations, okay, because he has enough of a heart issue, previous problem with kidneys that caused him a major crash 3 years ago. He's rallied, okay, and because of all of his weight loss, he doesn't have any risk of diabetes anymore. He's actually got very stable heart, and all of his Chem-7 stuff for the past 3 or 4 years have been just perfect. So okay, I don't know if that means he would be able to qualify for palliative at this point, but I would think on the mental side of it, for sure he would. I have no idea if he would qualify right for the others. Yes, all the consults we can get, yes.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to ask because the doctor will know, okay, is this diagnosis that he has currently, you know, does this meet the criteria? And they'll let you know if that's something you're interested in.
Of course I am.
I'll send you the one-pager so you have the information handy. So do you feel like you've had all your medical questions answered by neurology? Do you feel like, you know, everything was covered during that appointment?
When we finally got it, our neurologist was thorough enough to pay attention but couldn't even get through the testing. So she wasn't able to really give a full say on all the capabilities and all the different categories. She has a follow-up scheduled sometime in April to May, which may or may not be able to happen. She wasn't able to get through the testing protocols. She couldn't get in, not just to comply with, but to follow instructions enough to get through, and was falling asleep multiple times during the episode.
I see. Okay. So it was because of his participation that was causing the issue. Okay. Are you still connected to any kind of support groups in your area? I can send you information on what we have if you'd like.
Yes, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. And regarding the legal, dive into that now. Some of your siblings are not involved. Some grandchildren are willing to help. So when he's calling you, you know, at all hours of the night, are you answering the phone or do you have your ringer off and, you know, he's just calling to kind of talk about things that aren't really a relevant concern right now?
Sometimes they're unavoidable because he'll be calling 7, 8, 9, 10 times in a row.
I see, okay.
Other times he'll leave a long message. They're not congruent anymore.
Okay.
But he does ask questions that pop up from memory. The only time he seems to be able to operate the phone is after he's had his sundowner's rebound.
Yeah, you know, my concern is him disturbing your sleep, Sandy's sleep, and you having to get up to field these calls, obviously. You know, if it's a true emergency, how do you determine? You don't know until you answer the phone or he leaves a message or something. You have the cameras and things, so that's really great to have in there for peace of mind. And then, you know, having more help in the home, I think, will be helpful, too. In regards to protection of assets and Medicare, securing the trust, I would talk to an elder law attorney. I can send you some recommendations for folks in your area if you're not connected to one already. Okay. They are really the experts on how to navigate all of that and make sure, you know, you're set up in the correct way to go forth. And then I'll also send you information. It's a free service. They're senior placement advisors. And what they do is if you're interested in, you know, getting set up with residential care for him in the future, or even if you just want the education now just to prepare yourself, you can call and say, look, this is our situation. We're not quite there yet, but we might be soon. So what is out there for us in his price range, maybe Medicare covered, that sort of thing. And they're a free service. So they'll work with your budget. They'll work with what his needs are, the location you'd like him to be in. And hopefully, you know, there's something that's a good fit for everyone. Does he have any veterans benefits?
No, he does not.
Okay, just checking for benefits' sake. So the senior placement advisors, that's where I always advise people to start. Otherwise, it's kind of just like, you know, a crapshoot. You just go out there calling random places. You don't know how many rooms they have. It saves your time and energy to just go through someone who has a pulse on what's going on in the community.
I'm thrilled for that. Okay. Is that a separate agency that's private like yours, or is it a government thing through Medicare?
They're a private agency. We're separate. We're a nonprofit Alzheimer's Association. The senior placement advisors are typically all private agencies. How they make their money is they get a commission on the place where you end up choosing. So they don't charge you anything. Their commission is through the facility that you choose.
I understand. They're an agent.
Yeah, it's like having a real estate agent. It's a free service up front, and then, you know, their commission comes from outside. But they are very knowledgeable about how to use Medicare to pay for care, which places take it, what would be a good fit for him, what's going to have kind of activities and amenities that he's going to like, and that's affordable in his price range as well. And there's more steps that you kind of have to go through. You know, it's not quite like buying a house, because you have to go through the doctor and they have to fill out a form to let the facility know that, yes, this is the diagnosis, this is what this person needs help with. So everything is kind of documented, and the senior placement advisor will help you navigate all of that.
Because they're an agent, they have a vested interest in placing, and they are profit-based. So is there another agency that does an independent audit of facilities, reviews, and vet those things?
Sure. Yeah, you can do online reviews. There's the ombudsmen that are like a volunteer advocate group.
If you know of ones that are within reach of me here in Spokane or in Coeur d'Alene, I would like to meet them too.
Sure. You know, when you go through agencies like that, especially when you're in an area like Spokane or Coeur d'Alene, the community is not huge in regards to assisted living and memory care.
Right.
So if you get a bad reputation because you match somebody up with a place, that goes around quite quickly. The ones that I recommend are folks that, you know, I've had families come back to me and tell me we had a really great experience with them. They were very helpful. They didn't try to push us into anything. They just provided information. The first choice is one of those places. They're Simply Age. I'll send you three of them so you can kind of look through it and see.
Okay.
And then I'll send you the ombudsman too. In every facility, you'll see the number of the ombudsman should be posted, so that if you have any concerns about the facility itself, you can call the ombudsman and they help to kind of mediate things.
Okay.
So regarding communication and, you know, hallucinations, how do you typically handle that? Do you feel like you have a good strategy to handle that when he's having hallucinations or kind of not based in reality?
Well, my wife is a trained spiritual director, and I've got history and ministry and psychology-related functions, and I work in radio. So I do have some experience in communication issues when it comes to reading the emotional room and responding to it. I'm trying to educate his grandkids on how to not process their feelings into ways that communicate to him, so that he's not left with cues that are negative and are scary from their emotional responses.
Right.
So we are working through some of those issues right now. I don't have a whole suite of talents about how to redirect every single question, because the things that come to life, of course, are going to be the deeper and older memories.
Yeah.
What flushes out is some of the memories that I have no way to verify, because I was not part of the family during the time, because my parents divorced when I was 5. So when things come back and start being explored with me as if I know these things, I am not really sure how to participate in without making it seem like I'm redirecting all the time, because I just don't know. But I am trying to entertain as much possibility to let him explore his thought and his experience as possible. But his hallucinations seem to be very visual, so he's having plenty of field of vision things that are coming or crowding in that are taking the place of his field cuts, because he has quite a bit of problems with floaters now in his vision, so I think he entertains them as being something that's real and alive and part of the visual experience, so he doesn't know how to separate those. There's plenty of those kind of things that we're going through every single day.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say is, you know, I wasn't there for half of this stuff, so I don't know if it's true or not or how to respond. As long as he's not getting distressed by the conversation. If he's getting distressed, then your key thing would want to be to reassure him, you know, to acknowledge how he's feeling. Oh, Dad, that must be not feel very good. I'm sorry you're feeling that way. You know, that must be scary for you, or that must be sad for you. And then reassure him, well, I'm right here. Sandy's here. You know, the kids are here. We're going to make sure you're okay. Don't worry. You know, acknowledge the emotion, reassure, and then, like you've already been doing, redirect. And it's like, oh, did I show you this picture of a dog? Or like, oh, did I tell you about this story? Or, you know, and of course, that takes a lot of energy and time to do that over and over again. So do it as you can. You know, our communication isn't going to be 100% all the time.
Yeah.
You just do the best you can. Take breaks as often as needed. If you are finding yourself, you know, running thin on patience in a conversation, just say, hey, Dad, hold that thought for a second. I just need to go take care of something. And step away and just, you know, take a deep breath. And that's okay to do, too. You don't have to sit and listen to all these stories and everything all the time. Okay, so we covered the legal. I'm going to send you some elder law attorneys. Oh, I was going to mention, you said about the grandchildren who want to be involved and kind of interested in differing degrees. We do have a 24/7 helpline. So if any of them, and of course, everything I share with you at your discretion, you can pass on what you feel would be helpful to them.
Yep.
And we do have a 24/7 helpline. So if anybody in the family needs to ask a question related to memory loss, or even is having some kind of emotion, like you said, like you don't want the kids processing their emotions with him because that's upsetting to him, if they need to talk about it to somebody who, like a counselor, that is available 24 hours a day, evenings, weekends, holidays, they can call and say, hey, my grandpa's kind of doing this, I'm not really sure how to handle it. Or just a question, like, why is my grandpa doing this? Like, what does it mean, you know? Or for you or Sandy as well, if you feel like you need more information and it's not like a medical emergency, you can call the helpline as well. So I'll send you that number.
My discussions with the grandkids so far have been their deep desire to be useful and feeling completely unable to fathom what's going to be required or if it's even safe for them to enter in. So I'm trying to reassure them on some of those fronts too. And I'll give a copy of this conversation by an internet link to them all to listen through on it. They might be able and willing to use your services to talk through how do I do my best or what's a useful time frame? Should I give him like a day a month? Would a day every other month or so even mean anything to him? They'll probably try to process through some of those feelings and ideas because I would love them to, at the best of their ability, be willing to sit with him and to know they're being useful. I want them to know that they're appreciated for doing that. Yes, I'll be reinforcing that, but I would say anything you can forward along as far as a guide for those who are extended family that want to be part of the helping process and honor his life as it's still here and his memory as it goes would be very helpful.
Okay. Another thought I had towards that is some of it is obviously being useful to him. Some of it is taking things off of your plate as well because you're the primary support person. So if you identify things like, hey, grandpa needs a new whatever, can you look into this? Send them a link. So take something small that you is just adding onto your load of work. You can say, here, can you research this so we can look at, you know, options for this and then get back to me and let me know and I'll make a decision. Things like that is things that you can identify too. And then part of being useful, you know, coming together as a family and, you know, saying, okay, I can do this, you can do that. But then it's also for them personally to spend time with him, you know, and not have to be task-oriented. Maybe I'm just being with him and just being a grandchild and he's just my grandpa. You know, not everything has to be about the memory loss.
Right.
I know it seems like it is because, you know, it's impacting so many parts of his life and your lives. But, you know, just enjoying time together, you know, maybe taking him out for the day, going for lunch or bringing lunch over or, you know, something like that. Sweeping the floor, cleaning out his fridge, you know, you can identify kind of, because you know there's expired food in there probably, haven't been in there lately. Just tasks like that. Okay, you can go in, you know, once every 2 weeks and clean out the fridge. That would be a huge help to me because I have to manage all this medical stuff. And, you know, just kind of breaking it down into things like that and seeing who is able to truly commit. You know, and they need to be honest about their commitment too. If you really don't think you can do it, don't put your name in the hat. Just say, I'll give him a call. I can talk to him on the phone and, you know, be of service that way or whatever.
Yes, I understand.
So things like that.
I'm beginning to get much more granular with that list. And yes, I'll add a category of things about the being with section.
Well, I'm sure you and Sandy can identify. I mean, there's so many things to keep a household running. And then when someone's not able to do it themselves, it's falling on you. So, yeah, if the grandkids are able and willing to take on, you know, even little pieces of it, that would be great. Of course, you can stay in touch with me and ask me any questions you have, same with Sandy as well. Any other questions you have or any other topics you wanted to talk about?
Do you have a roadmap for this kind of zone defense, a way to assess the not just the capabilities and willingness of people or their desire to, but how to help them manage their lives and balance it with what they want to do or intend to do to help over here? Is there anything you have as far as the questions that they could ask each other and have an open discussion about? Caregivers, the grandkids and the kids that are able and willing to be part of this, are there table talk conversation starters about how to work through those questions so they can talk to each other?
Oh, yeah. We have a document. I believe it's something along the lines of, you know, how to help a family who's dealing with Alzheimer's. I mean, any memory loss, really. Yeah. So I can send you that.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and then you know what I would do is identify strengths and interests and things like that. So they can do that on themselves. You don't have to go in and say, you know, what's your strength? Mm-hmm. They can do that. Oh, I'm good at this. I enjoy organizing. I'm good at taking care of the yard. Whatever it is, if there's something that they prefer to do, that's kind of a natural fit. If you want to create a list of things that would be helpful, and then everybody signs up for one of those things, and then see what's left over, and then, you know, if the caregiver can kind of help with some of that stuff too, that would be good. Even with the neighbor, it's good to kind of have something formal. And if you're going kind of an independent way, the neighbor doesn't work for an agency, right? It's someone with a nursing background?
Correct. So she's just a well-intentioned neighbor who has other gigs that she does throughout the week involving childcare and other service things, but she does have the skill set. She has expressed an interest in being available for pay.
And that tends to be less expensive than going through an agency, but then, of course, on the other hand, an agency is, you know, they're licensed and bonded, background checks, things like that. So that's my only caution.
Right.
I do have a contract that you can use if you're working with an independent person.
Very helpful,
So, you know, things are quite formal, and, you know, even though, you know, it's a neighbor and you don't know who good face, just to have everything down in writing and in paper, it can be helpful as well.
Yes, and if there's any a checklist sheet of the kind of person that is well-suited for this, I mean, if there's any of those kind of prompters that I can just lay them in front of and say, this is what the Alzheimer's Association says, help us find out what your interests and your abilities are. I mean, I would love to be able to go through that as an organized way of introducing and auditioning people for the role and be able to do the same thing with folks through Facebook Marketplace and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we have a document called Choosing In-Home Care Provider. So that will outline much of what you said. For independent contractor, I guess the main question is, do you have experience working with someone with a memory loss?
Yeah.
And if that's no, that's okay.
Right.
Do you have experience where you've had to use patience, where you have to repeat yourself and give extra time for things? Those are kind of the main things, you know, besides the background checks and the vetting and that kind of security stuff. But, like, the person has to have a lot of patience and be able to take the time. Things are moving much slower now, you know, he's needing more reminders. Also, working with the communication piece is very important, too, like you've already identified with the grandkids, you know, don't process your emotions with him because we don't want to cause him any distress. He doesn't need that. Same would be with the caregiver. They need to know how to de-escalate a situation rather than cause his emotions to be stirred up in a negative way.
Right.
So those are things to kind of keep in mind, you know. Very patient, knows how to communicate with someone who has a memory loss, can de-escalate a situation if he's getting upset. Would you know how to handle that? And then if they're saying, okay, let's clean up your room today, William, and he says no, then that's okay. They can try again the next day. You don't want to upset him in a way that is like, you're not going to make him do it right now. He's not in the mood to do it, or, you know, he doesn't want it. It's his choice. They need to be respectful of his thoughts and feelings as well, obviously.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I will send you all of that. If anything else that you'd like to talk about or that wasn't covered so far?
If there's any guides on technology that are helpful, I mean, I've already decided I've got to get rid of the cell phone because he's lost it so many times. And go back to a landline setup. Of course, the problem in modern day is that you can't just get a landline dropped by a phone company anymore. So trying to find the right combination of modem that can be able to feed a POTS line into the house who has a hardwired phone. I'm not even sure he's not going to take it out of the wall and move it somewhere anyway. But nonetheless, trying to figure out what the most reliable, less likely to be removed and disposed of or lost items are going to be, and how to operate them better. I mean, are there certain kinds of bottles of phone or things that are designed for these kind of situations? Even phones that might even have pictures there, you just push a button and it dials it for you directly. You can see it happening. Are there any of those kind of tech out there that you have tracked or that the Alzheimer's Association is aware of, or they have vendors for these kind of things that are vetted by the association that are worth contacting?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what's out there that's going to be useful in the situation for him to be able to actually try to call somebody at an appropriate time, or that does not call out between the hours of midnight and 4 or 5 in the morning, something like that. Are there any of those kind of tech helps that are out there? That would be great.
Okay, I'll look for you. I have not heard of, you know, devices that put a block during certain times or anything like that. If he's awake at night, that is a concern to me too, because why is he awake at night, you know? If he's sundowning and then he's like, oh, I gotta use the phone now and start making these calls. Well, I guess Dr. Lusso has begun kind of her her management of this. You know, that's something to let her know. You can send her a message even on my chart and say, hey, he's not sleeping. He's up at night using the phone and doing who knows what, wandering around the house and stuff like that. If he's not sleeping, then the next day, as you know, anybody who hasn't slept well is not in their best form. So he might be more groggy. He might be more disoriented.
I would say his cycle is shifting when he actually falls asleep, but it is every single night.
Every single night, yeah. So, okay. And I know you're not there, so it's hard to tell, you know, if he's napping in the day or whatnot. So having somebody there will be very helpful to say, okay, you know, William, would you like to take a nap now? Or I mean, even getting him ready for bed has, like, you know, a routine, helping him brush his teeth and get ready for bed, and even helping calming him down during the sundowning episode. Yeah, you're at a point where you definitely need somebody to come in and assist. Anything else, Graham, what's there?
If there's anything about inflection point where we're at the point where in-home care is not worth spending time looking for, we really need to, because of these issues, go direct to next steps or whatever. Is there any way to assess those by a checklist for the family would be helpful too?
The main thing for that I can tell you is safety. Mm-hmm. So folks will bring somebody in. You know, that's all, usually they want their loved one to be able to stay at home for as long as possible, of course. So they bring in care. So that might be 2 or 3 days a week, might be, you know, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, whatever it is. If it's not 24-hour care, so there's a big gap at night where people should be sleeping, not much going on, you feel like you're okay. But if they're getting up at night, wandering out of the house, trying to get out, things like that, then it becomes a safety concern. Maybe those uncovered hours, maybe he truly does need more care because it's just kind of waiting for an accident to happen. Maybe he's going to fall. You know, you want to prevent those things from happening because nobody can predict when is that going to happen. If you bring in care and he's still calling at night, this is not really beneficial to us. I think we need to look for 24-hour care for him to move into. You know, that's your decision to make as the person in the support caregiver role. You're the one that's having to manage these behaviors and all the care that goes with him staying in his home. So when it becomes too much for you, that's up to you and Sandy to decide, okay, even with having a caregiver in the home, this still isn't working. We're still not getting him to be calm and settled in and not calling us all the time, or we're still having to do the majority of the work. So it's really, you know, up to you as a family to kind of talk about it and decide. Of course, you want him to be able to stay in his home for as long as possible. That's usually everybody's wish. But his safety is the most important. And if you think that's compromised in any way, even with having in-home care, then it's time to look at other options. But I will send you the list.
That's great. I appreciate that.
The stages help to determine that. So it'll say, you know, okay, does he need help with bathing? Does he need help with medication management? You know, the more things you need help with, the longer those things take. So you need more care in the home. And is that going to be cost-effective versus having him in a 24-hour care situation, in assisted living or memory care or what have you. So, okay, I'll definitely send you that. If you have any questions at all, you'll have my direct line and you'll have my email. So whichever works best for you, you can give me a call or shoot me an email. Any questions that come up, I will have that information to you by the end of today. So, like I said, please get in touch if you have any additional questions, and I will send that information out today.
You're a great sport, and I imagine it is quite exhausting for you to go through this entire questionnaire however many times a day you do it. So thank you for your graciousness.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. It's really important to me for families to have the support that they need as they navigate through this. I appreciate that. Thanks so much. Take care.
Okay, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.